Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 13 years ago, the Beloit College Mindset List came into being. The list, in part, was intended to delineate the cultural references for incoming freshmen, with the idea that to make references in a college lecture, for example, the group must agree on the reference in the first place. The list also is intended to start a discussion about what we have in common and apart. As one Huffington Post writer put it, however, the list also can have the unintended consequence of making people feel old. Maybe there are other unintended consequences. To find out, we invited Beloit College Humanities Professor Tom McBride, who has helped assemble the mindset list since it was created. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Also, the creator is Public Affairs Director Emeritus Ron Neef. He was going to join us today, but he couldn't, and we're sorry, we will miss him. Thanks again, though, Tom, for joining us anyway.
My pleasure.
Just hearing that the typical students entering college this week have never recognized that to point to their wrists was a request for the time of day changes how I feel about them, because for me it's also about, can you give me the check, please? I'm running out of time. You know, so and it changes me when I read the list. Has it changed you over 13 years?
Has it changed my research interests?
Or you're just how you, yeah, I guess maybe.
Yeah, it has changed me, and I think it's a result of a couple of things coming together at the same time. You know, the first is just the work that I've done on the list over the last 13 years. The second is that I have, during those 13 years, gone from the age of 52 to the age of 64. And so the combination of the two things has really, I think, made me appreciate a little bit more keenly what it means to grow old, what it means to step aside and let the new generation come in, what it means to feel somewhat irrelevant, what it means, in fact, to be insulted a little bit by both the physical as well as the circumstantial effects of age. So, yes, I think the combination of the project and perhaps my own, we'll call it very politely, maturation, have certainly come together, you know, to give me perhaps what could be called, but perhaps shouldn't be called, wisdom.
Well, it is the sort of thing you think, gee, I wish I didn't know who Beethoven was either. You know, I wish I was 18 again. So what is the point? Why was the list created in the first place?
There had been lists throughout the 1990s that were we thought, bad-humored. They were sort of lists that were emphasizing the cultural illiteracy of college students, what they don't know about Mozart and Dickens when they come into college. And we decided that we would come up with a somewhat kinder and gentler list, a more good-humored list that focused not on what they didn't know in terms of, you know, cultural touchstones, but what their attitudes were, what their mindset was, what their mores were, what their customs were, what had essentially been in their events horizon, you know, since they'd been born. And it had the double effect of giving adult readers, or I shouldn't say adult, but perhaps, you know, non-college student readers, mm-hmm. A sense of really what had happened over the last 18 years.
You know, it sort of reminds me in a way of those, you know, you can buy them at some kind, sometimes in strange stores or restaurants, where you get the what happened on the day you were born or
right.
The year you were born, that
right.
Kind of thing.
That's right. Some years ago, we used to have a fairly regular assignment at Beloit College in which students were asked to go through Life magazine in the year they were born, or go through Life magazine during the month in which they were born. And of course, that was back in the days when you could actually go to the shelves and, you know, find bound volumes of Life magazine. And this was always a very successful assignment because it gave students a sense of an historical imagination. And I think that, you know, one of the underlying messages of the mindset list for entering college students is that indeed, if you don't go to college, then to some extent you're going to be sort of stuck, you know, in the bottom of the a platonic cave in which you'll only be aware of what's happened, you know, during the life of your generation. And obviously going to college is all about, you know, sort of getting out of that cave.
My guest is Beloit College Humanities Professor Tom McBride. He's helped assemble and edit the Mindset List for the last 13 years. If you have a question or comment for Tom, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Or if you know about it, there's All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So you can go there and post your comment there as well. How do you decide what – how is the list actually constructed? It must change from year to year.
It does. The first thing we do is take the current year and subtract 18. So we are obviously – this year we were in the year 2010. We subtracted 18, and that got us to 1992. We then go back and essentially relive that year. We go through microfiche. We look at magazines. We read books. We do everything we can to try to sort of recapture what it was like in the year they were born. We do our own sort of version, I guess you might say, of the Life magazine assignment of yesteryear. And we work forward from there. We try to find items that meet the following criteria. First of all, we want items that are really rather striking. Secondly, items that we think are really significant in terms of the implications for the future, items that are particularly emblematic of their own attitudes and their own customs. So those are the big three: those that are striking, those that have larger historical implications, and those that are particularly illustrative of their mindsets.
Some of the ways you put things, like, and number four is Al Gore has always been animated.
Right.
How do you see it? How do you decide to put it that way?
Well, we simply realize that when they were born in 1992,
right,
Al Gore was, of course, elected vice president of the United States, and there was for about 8 years during the period in which Gore was vice president a lot of jokes about how deanimated he was. There was the old story that the Secret Services, or the code name for Bill Clinton, was Bad Bubba, but their code name for Al Gore was just Al Gore because he was so sort of dull and deanimated and so forth. But then we realized that, in fact, they would really have no memory of that. They were only 8 years of age when Gore actually left the vice presidency, ran for president. They would, of course, remember the 2000 election, but most of that emphasis on Gore as being deanimated would have largely escaped their political consciousness. So how do they know Al Gore? Well, they know Al Gore through An Inconvenient Truth, where, of course, Gore has been really very, very animated, almost charismatic.
Okay.
So that was our reasoning there.
Where Al Gore has always had a personality.
That's right, exactly.
Number 12 is Clint Eastwood is better known as a sensitive director than as Dirty Harry, and that is an incredible contrast. I mean, it's always been a contrast for people who know him as Dirty Harry that he turned out to be such a – not that it was a dichotomy, but just a strange transition from that to being such a great director.
I think that's right, and I think, that particular item serves a sort of double function. First of all, it's the sort of, I can't believe how old I'm getting, right, and how young they're getting. They don't remember Dirty Harry.
The feeling of, doesn't everybody know that?
Right,
kind
doesn't
of
everybody know that? It seems like Dirty Harry was just yesterday, so how old can I be? And the other response we get along those lines is, just when I'm getting old and I want time to slow down, it seems to be speeding up. This hardly seems fair. So there's that whole function. But then, of course, there's the other thing, which is that, the sort of decline, I think, of the Dirty Harry type, suggests perhaps indeed some rejiggering of masculine gender roles, that we're now sort of more into a kind of metrosexual thing, rather than the old, sort of tough guy Dirty Harry thing. So there were a couple of different functions that were being served, we thought, with that particular item.
Change, obviously, to be rhetorical, isn't new, but it does feel like it's happening faster, particularly technologically. So how does that play into what you decide goes on the list?
Well, it makes it easier for us because clearly I think the major basis for the generation gap today is not ideological. It is technological. It's not, this is not your parents' generation gap or our old generation gap, as sort of children of the boomer 60s generation, which was much more ideological. Ours is much more technological. And because technology changes so quickly, a lot can change just in 1 year. And that actually helps us a little bit because, you know, one of the questions we often get is, well, how much can really have changed between 91 and 92? Well, actually, we find that a little bit more is changing between 91 and 92 than you may think, just because I think our society has become so very faddish, and because technology does change so quickly, and because, you know, cultural change and turnover is so very, very rapid now. In addition to that, you know, there have been these studies that have tried to account for the oft observed phenomena that when you do get older, time does seem to speed up. And there actually now are some, you know, scientific surveys, and that's not surveys, but scientific experiments and hypotheses that try to explain why that happens. So I think it really happens at both ends, right? I think it happens objectively with technological change, but it also happens subjectively in the brains of us who are older, as time does seem to speed up, as we do, in fact, you know, move more and more towards our 50s and 60s.
And the ultimate, the end.
And the ultimate end, right? the dirt nap, as one of my friends likes to call it.
You poll professors for this. Do you ever poll students?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do talk to students. We talk to Beloit College students. A few years ago, I had the great luxury of spending a lot of time talking to my daughter, who was born in 1988. She's no longer a college student. She's graduated from college. But she was a great help to us because she was somebody that we could talk to on a fairly regular basis. And she would also talk to her friends on our behalf. Yes, we do actually talk to students, but students really don't enjoy this list as much as the older people do. Students will occasionally even resent the list. I can remember when I was a kid, my parents would often talk about me in my presence with their friends, you know, in a kind of lip-smacking way, and I resented that, and I can sort of understand why today's college students might resent it a little bit, too. We do get, you know, we do hear from them a lot, though. We hear from them asking us to explain this or that or to protest against the accuracy of a particular item or whatever.
We will return with some other criticisms your comments and questions, if you want. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Tom McBride. He's the Beloit College of Humanities professor and also one of the creators and editors of the Mindset List. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On your drive home, get local updates with the award-winning WOSU News Team.
Currently, there's no law on the books that requires Ohio pain management clinics be regulated. That's why it's so easy to open up pill mills.
The legislation that we've put together would regulate the pain clinics and those doctors practicing in the pain clinics.
Hear the latest in local and national news with All Things Considered on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 70 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a hot one with a high of 88. Clear skies tonight, a low of 65. Some sunshine for Wednesday. There is a chance of rain and a high of 85.
Support for WOSU comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts. Breast cancer survivor and author of The Middle Place and Lift, Kelly Corrigan, will share her experiences Thursday, September 30th at the McCoy Center for the Arts in New Albany. Details at mccoycenter.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Beloit College Humanities Professor Tom McBride. He helped assemble the Mindset List 13 years ago and continues to do so. Tom, you know, there's an element of humor and lightheartedness to all of this, but some people, as you mentioned earlier, particularly college students, are offended by it, and other people are offended by it too. Like, it's a way of, it's something about a way of making people feel old too.
Right,
How do you answer that particular criticism?
Well, we aren't in a conspiracy to make people feel old. You know, we think that that's just a natural byproduct of the kind of society we live in, and it's a sort of probably a natural byproduct of just the whole biological process of aging. So there's really not a whole lot we can do about that. The other response that we get, I think, comes from I think there are sort of two varieties, I suppose. One, of course, is that many students feel as though we're attacking them, that, you know, we're saying that they are stupid or that they're ignorant or whatever. And we do, in fact, try to explain very, very patiently to them. We get an enormous number of emails and letters from people every week, and we do try to explain patiently, particularly to younger readers of the list, that we're really only talking about their mindset. We're not talking about their knowledge or their data set, only about their mindset. So, and we even add that, you know, we were also young once. It's you know, very, very hard to believe, but we were once 18-year-olds, and that we too were to some extent, you know, sort of prisoners of what we had experienced. I think that all of us, in many respects, continue to be prisoners of what we have actually experienced, and this is why it's so important to develop a sense of historical imagination so that you can, in fact, step outside your own experience. But we explain to them that that's a struggle for us. It will be a struggle for them. We're not trying to suggest that they're stupid. But then the other response, I think, comes generally from people who think, I think, that the list is a little bit more serious than it is. And I'll give you an example of that. We had one writer, I think it was either the Wall Street Journal or the New Yorker, who said, "My goodness, are you really asking us to believe that students, you know, don't know who Beethoven is? I mean, are you really, you know, trying to suggest seriously to us that students say in the class of 2010, one to the other, you know, the Ninth Symphony is really pretty good, given that it was written by Dog. You know, you're not really asking us to believe that, are you?" And, you know, that's a very, very, very literal, sort of, you know, overly earnest, you know, reading of the list. Now, we certainly think that the list has its serious side. We have a book coming out next summer. It's an historical book to be published by Wiley, where we are actually going to be using mindset list methodology to look at American history, American social history from 1880 to 2030. And we also have a Facebook site, you know, called the Mindset List, where we have a daily historical quiz. We even have a quiz for high school students. So there is, you know, clearly a serious side to the Mindset List, but we really don't mean to suggest that students don't know who Beethoven is. We simply were pointing out that the first time they may have heard about Beethoven may have been when he was I think he was not a golden retriever, I believe.
He was a big one of those.
He was one of those big
alphas. Slobbering things, right? Yeah,
that's right, exactly, right. So
adorable though, adorably slobbering. You know, I think
adorably slobbering. That's right.
To the point. For me, when the Beethoven, you know, when you make the point about Beethoven in the list, is that I didn't ever associate anything but music with the name Beethoven.
Right. Of course.
When I started college, they associate something more with it than a great, you know, musician, a great.
That's right. A great composer.
Yeah.
Sure. Exactly. I mean. You know, to sort of make the contrast a little bit more pointed, you know, when I first got in touch with Beethoven, you know, when I was a little kid down in Central Texas taking, you know, piano lessons or trying to take piano lessons, I mean, you know, my first assumption was that it was pronounced Beethoven, okay?
Of course.
Okay, and then I was told that no, you know, if you don't want to be known as a rube, you better pronounce it Beethoven. And then, of course, I looked at a portrait of Beethoven, and I thought he looked awfully strange. You know, little did I know that a lot of people would look like Beethoven in 10 years when the 60s was going to come along. But you know, I mean, I associated Beethoven clearly with high culture, okay? And they, of course, I think probably first associated, you know, Beethoven with this dog. And so, I mean, you know, that's just a huge difference in the culture in which I grew up and the culture in which they grew up. And it's just factual. There's nothing. I don't think there's anything that we need to make out of it. It's just a factual difference.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Robert, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. I agree with your take on the Beethoven thing. I think just because it's different doesn't mean it's worse. And I think for most people my age or even older, don't associate the William Tell Overture with William Tell. I think I was in college before I realized that wasn't called the theme to the Lone Ranger. And my kids don't even know who the Lone Ranger is. So yes.
I mentioned the word Tonto to my kid. I was working on his Spanish with him the other day. I go, Tonto. I go, that means silly. I go, what a strange name for the Lone Ranger sidekick. He's like, who are you talking about?
It is funny. I think this is a great group of a great generation coming up, and I think it's very funny that people sort of automatically put down the younger generation and say they're entitled. You know, they have false entitlements and all of these very strange things. When in fact, they're likely not going to have it as well as we had it. I think in a lot of ways, and they're a lot less troubled than we were as kids too. The crime is down, and yet restrictions against young people are up. So I think they're a terrific group, and they have abandoned our prejudice.
Oops, we lost you, Robert.
Well, let me. Okay. Sorry, we lost Robert.
Yeah.
But let me just very pointedly agree with him. You know, in doing the research for this book that we have coming up, looking at mindset lists for 10 generations starting in 1880, one of the things we have discovered is that every generation does more or less put down the young. There does seem to be almost a sort of meme that floats around the brains of the older generation that suggests that the nation is going to hell in a handbasket as a result of the spoiled nature of the previous generation. For example, around the turn of the century, you had older people absolutely convinced that the younger generation was spoiled by zippers, that zippers were really going to mean the end of America. Now, this was the same generation, of course, that ended up fighting World War One. So much for, you know, being spoiled by zippers. I think this is part of the tradition of the American Jeremiah. It's not altogether unhealthy. I think we should worry about the future. I think that's a good part of the American discourse. But so far, I think a good deal of it has been extremely exaggerated. And I agree with Robert. I think, you know, today's young people are really terrific.
My producer said the class of 2014 has always understood what it means to drop a cell phone call, too, which reminded me of the fact that when I was a junior high school kid, I had to sit by the phone and talk to my friends in public.
Right.
We didn't have them. I didn't have one in my room. I wasn't lucky enough to have that. But you also couldn't wander around with your cell phone.
No, you could not at all. In fact, I can remember as a kid, you know, my father was a railroad conductor who kept odd hours. And we got a jack so that we could move the phone around in the house. And that was just seen at the time as a very revolutionary technology. I mean, you actually have two places in the house where you can move the phone. That was just, you know, considered wonderful. But, you know, clearly, you know, mobility with phones has not always been around. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, that we like to do with the mindset list. We like to take it into our classes, and particularly during our new student days at Beloit College, and get those kinds of conversations started, because students today, you know, really do, unless they're really sort of jogged, think that there have always been, or there has always been, mobility with phones, and we like to explain to them, actually, no, there hasn't always been mobility.
Well,
with
I guess
phones.
It's the same sort of thing as I thought zippers have been around a long time.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, who imagines you know, zippers as being anything, you know, other than routine today? You know, Arthur C. Clarke made the point that every new technology is really indistinguishable. Any brilliant new and innovative new technology is indistinguishable from magic. And then after a while, it becomes routine. The magic is gone. I still think that the Internet is magic. I mean, whenever I'm talking in real time to somebody in Poland or Finland or whatever, I continue to believe that it is magic. But I'm not sure that's true for the younger generation. I think they, in fact, having grown up with this, really think of it as sort of routine. But, yes, at one time, zippers were considered magic.
Kind of like the Internet is to them what maybe having 2.5 channels back in 1968 was to me.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
on television.
That's exactly right.
And thinking it was good.
That's right. Or being able to turn the antenna on my house,
yeah.
so I could pick up a fake signal from a Houston TV station. Right. That was magic to me.
Or going across the street to the neighbor's house to watch their color TV.
That's right, yeah. Well, the magic is just across the street.
Exactly.
NBC Peacock.
614-292-8513 if you want to talk with Tom McBride. He is one of the authors of the Benoit College Mindset List. And Kate, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm intrigued by the title and the whole idea, and I'm not sure I've quite caught on to it yet. And I'm wondering if they're involved in stuff that perhaps has a broader basis. That I have this theory that there's some breaking point here in young, very young people, where they are going to be totally unable to comprehend the world I grew up in, that things are changed so drastically with the modern technology that while I never lived in a world where the hay wagons were a common thing and, you know, people had funny old cars and, you know, differences that changed where the telephone wasn't all that big, things happened gradually, but now we're at a stage where everything is so drastically, the whole thing of living with a phone on your ear and all of the information you ever are going to need in a small thing that you carry in your handbag or pocket. I think that there's going to be a stage that people of some age are going to have no idea what we're talking about, except as they saw it in the movie.
Right. Well, are we still on?
Yes, we are.
Oh, great. Well, I think that's a really, really fascinating and very, very apt comment. I think that I would have a couple of different reactions. So, first of all, I think the caller is correct. One of the things that we've done in our forthcoming book is to do a futuristic mindset list for the class of 2030. And, one of the items that we were dabbling with at one point was that you might very well walk into a library where there were very, very few books in, 20 years or 25 years. On the other hand, your cell phone alone might have enough space for a 1,000-book library. So, I think this notion that, indeed, information is going to be packed into smaller and smaller and smaller space, completely leaving behind the older storage techniques of information. This is not, I think, science fiction anymore. I think that we clearly, have a glimpse of this kind of future. So I completely agree with the caller from that point of view. In terms of how we're going to lose the past, I think that once again, this is why, the good Lord made history teachers, and we are going to have to, I think, come up with more and more imaginative ways by which to teach history and to impart a historical perspective, because we don't want to lose the past. I mean, I think that there is, in my view, just sort of a pro-civilized reason why people who did not have mobile phones should not be forgotten, and that there needs, in fact, to be a tremendous, tremendous appreciation for the past and a tremendous imagination about the past. Because if we don't have an imagination about the past, if we don't have a knowledge about the past, then we're likely, in fact, to lack imagination about a lot of other things. So I think that both things are true. I think that things are moving enormously fast, really, I think, faster than they have ever moved technologically before in history. But I think that, paradoxically, we very, very, very much need to keep this historical perspective. And can our society do both these things at the same time? Well, I certainly certainly hope so, but I think it's going to be a tremendous challenge.
Thank you, Kate, for your call. 614-292-8513. Abe, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of perspectives, and I think that what was said about losing perspective of the past is actually more very important, because you learn from the past not to make the mistakes of the past. And I think that reinventing the wheel all the time is really not effective. You reinvent the wheel with some progress. That makes sense. But on the other hand, there are many things that have happened in the past that explain the present, and I think that that loss. But what I really called about is that I live in Worthington, so trash day is Friday. So every day for me, I'm older. Every day for me is Thursday, because I find myself putting out the trash every day. But there's another aspect of it. I am very upset and angry that I don't have another life, because I think that what's going on now is extremely exciting in many, many ways, and I just can't participate because I don't have the time. So that's essentially my comment.
Well, thank you very much. I love the comment about putting out the trash every day. I think that's a wonderful commentary on our times, and I very, very much appreciate, you know, because I feel the same way, that this is all, you know, so exciting. And it's so bewildering to think about what's going to happen next, that I'm really sorry that I won't be around to see it. I'm wondering if maybe my kids won't you know, at least bury a cell phone with me, so that, you know, just in case they can give me a call. And I certainly appreciate what the caller said about, you know, the need for perspective in order to, I think, really almost understand the future. And certainly, you know, again, in my own research and in Ron's research, I think one of the things that we have learned by way of historical perspective by studying the past is the enormous capacity of people to adapt to changing circumstances. And, you know, to me, the leading example of that, you know, over the past 25 or 30 years has been the advent of women in the workforce and the way in which that has created enormous changes in our society, and the way in which there has been this wonderful, I think, constructive mutual adjustment and adaptation to what has been largely a very healthy change in our society. And what I think the past teaches us is that the human capacity to adjust and to adapt to change, as long as it's not too disruptive, is, in fact, really, really quite remarkable, and I think is, in fact, the basis for a lot of optimism.
We're going to return in a second with Tom McBride. He is a humanities professor at the Beloit College, and that is where the Beloit College Mindset List is created. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
We can be so closed in. And when you listen to WOSU, they address things from more than one point of view. It's a global point of view, and you realize that you are indeed a citizen of the world and not just a citizen of Columbus, Ohio. My name is Joyce Eubanks, and WOSU is my source for a world view.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here, and we'll hear about the virtues of defensive pessimism with humorist and regular contributor to This American Life, David Rakoff. He joins Ann Fisher at 11 on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
It's 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:41. Sunshine today and a high of 88. Clear skies tonight, a low of 65. Some sunshine tomorrow. There's also a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 85 degrees. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Tom McBride, one of the writers and editors of the Beloit College Mindset List. If you would like to speak with Tom, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can Twitter at Ann Fisher, WOSU, or go to our Facebook page. Tom, I think I saw number 72 on a poster last week. It says, it's the economy, stupid, and always has been. I had no connection to the mindset list until I was reading it to prepare for the interview. And I think, wait a minute, I think I saw that somewhere. Do you ever see stuff popping up from the list?
Yes. In fact, there are occasionally we see rogue lists out there that are attributed to us. Even though they're not, and of course we get, there are lots and lots of articles and stories about items on the list. We find that the list has been an extremely good sort of column starter, as it were. Nancy Gibbs in Time, for example, has used us a couple of times to get her column started. So we like to think that, you know, the mindset list and New York cartoons are perhaps the best article and sermon starters in the country.
Because it's a way of helping us understand each other.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, the generation gap has been around for a long time. We like to think that it's something that happened as a result of Vietnam and the sexual revolution and civil rights of the 60s, or it's something that happened as a result of technology in the new millennium. But if you go back to Shakespeare's plays, his plays, his comedies, and even some of his tragedies are really full of enmity between the generations. So it does appear, I think, to have really a sort of a basis, you know, not just in human culture, but also in human nature.
Somewhere I read that that the observation about young people, the criticisms change over time. In other words, we thought it's not, we, I mean, I never thought about it at all, but that Beavis and Butthead was going to be sort of the downfall of humanity, and it hasn't turned out that way at all. And
no,
that happens over and over and over again.
Right, exactly. I mean, if you look at this particular, you know, generation of students, I've been teaching Gen Y now for, you know, quite a number of years, I guess. The fact of the matter is they're not really a Beavis and Butthead generation at all. They are probably, in fact, the sort of most nice and constructive and courteous generation we've had in this country since probably the 1950s or the early 1960s. So, you know, they are this strange combination, really, of really being, you know, very, very nice on the one hand, you know, hardly the rebellious revolutionaries of the 60s or even the cynics of Generation X, but they're also very technologically hip and very adept. They're this very strange combination of very courteous and very ironic. And I've never quite seen anything like this before.
Are is the list ranked in any particular importance or order?
Not really, except insofar as we like to put the sort of shocking ones maybe closer to the beginning. So we started off this year with the one about the cursive, but we don't like to put items roughly in the same category too near one another. But, you know, other than that, there's really, you know, nothing at all suggested hierarchically about the order in which the items on the list appear.
Yeah, the first one is few in the class know how to write in cursive, and that's certainly a topic that pops up actually quite a bit in, you know, among older people.
That's right. We've gotten a lot of pushback on that one. We've gotten a lot of pushback. We've also gotten a lot of support. We've had people write in and say, my son or daughter does too know how to write in cursive, or we've even had students saying, I know how to write in cursive. But, you know, the majority responses have been, they did learn once upon a time, but most of them do this kind of strange combination of printing and cursive, and they really don't need to practice cursive. They don't write in cursive all that much because, of course, you know, they grew up, with a keyboard. So, but that one, that particular item has probably gotten this year the most attention, even more so than Beethoven. And by the way, Beethoven was a St. Bernard, I just remembered.
That's right, St. Bernard. I kept seeing the barrel under his chin, but I could not place the guy. the second one is, and I don't want to give them all away on the air, but the email is just too slow, and they seldom, if ever, use snail mail. Now, I do send letters or cards once in a while, but I agree, email is just too slow.
Well, it is. I mean, I think that, you know, the basis for that one is that they really do want to be in touch at all times. And so, you know, you're a high school junior, and, you know, your name is Veronica, and you want to get in touch with your friend Elizabeth. And Elizabeth is in the school, but she's in another part of the building, and you want to be in touch with her all the time, including, you know, between classes. You can't be expected to run off and find a computer or a laptop in order to send her an email, and she can't be expected in a 10-minute recess or 5-minute recess to go off and find a laptop or a computer in which to receive your email. So you just have to text. That's just all there is to it, and that's what they do. It's really a complete miracle. It's like being able to summon anybody in the world, or at least anybody in the country, to your side instantly within a matter of seconds. And, you know, they're sort of, it's kind of a combination of magic and telegrams, I guess. And not that they know what a telegram is. And so, yeah, email is much too slow. And let me just also mention that, you know, if any of your listeners would like to see the whole list, in fact, all the lists, going back to 2002, for the class of 2002, mm-hmm. which came out in 1998, they want to see all the lists. They can go to beloit.edu/mindset, which will take them all the way from 2010 to 1998.
All righty. We'll post that address on our website, allsides at wosu.org/allsides. I'm sorry, that's our email. Well, at wosu.org/allsides. That's our website, and we'll post that website there if that helps.
Oh, great.
Our
thanks.
Listeners.
I
yeah,
think,
no problem.
I think your listeners will have a lot of fun going back through all those old lists.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to talk with Tom McBride. He is one of the creators, one of the editors of the Beloit College Mindset List. You can go to that website we mentioned if you want to see what we're talking about. It's a list. It's a 75. It's numbered to 75. Any magic in the number 75, Tom?
Well, I guess not really. It's just a sort of intuitive sense of, you know, that's probably about as far as we should go. We develop every year about three times that many items, and then pare down, you know, from there. So the 75 is kind of our top 75, and then I will sometimes use what's left over on the Facebook site as the basis for our daily quiz or whatever. So. There's no real magic number, I guess, in 75. There's no hidden Da Vinci Code meaning or anything like that.
It's been suggested that the list might be helpful to parents.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's helpful to parents and parents. I guess, you know, parents would have to be considered one of our top sort of two or three constituencies. You know, teachers and professors are another. I think, but parents are certainly right up there, and parents also like to share with us what they call their mindset moments. Mm-hmm. We have another website, mindsetmoment.com, where one of the features is mindset moments, and parents will write in and say, The other day, I mentioned Billy Graham, and my son didn't know whom I was talking about. Or the other day, my daughter said, Mom, I just realized it's not 8-track, it was 8-track, wasn't it? And so it's that kind of thing.
Well, like Tonto.
Or Tonto, sure, I mean, exactly, right, just, exactly.
And it, they pop up at the strangest times.
That's right, exactly. I mean, and this is, of course, you know, on the Facebook side where we do have the daily quiz, you know, I will, I'm just likely to put up a question like that, you know, put up a question about Kemosabe. And of course, the older set just loves that, you know. And the younger fans on the Facebook site will just, their posts will be just a bunch of question marks. Like, you know, what are you talking about here?
Because they don't even bother to ask, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's a question mark. You know, Kemosabe, what's this all about? So, you know, one of the great things is YouTube, because then when you answer the question for them the next day on the site, you can always, in fact, include a little clip, you know, from the beginning of the Lone Ranger or something. And so it's kind of a way, you know, to give the younger generation a taste of what they missed.
It's a history lesson.
It's a history lesson. Taste of what they missed, or a taste of what they're glad that they did miss.
All right. 614-292-8513. Tom, you're on the air. You're on the air with Tom McBride. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. I met the Cisco Kid when I was 7.
Wow.
But what I wanted to say was, you know, it used to be that necessity was the mother of invention. And now it's kind of the opposite. You know, the mother of invention is what becomes a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I think there's something to it. I mean, you know, we do, in fact, you know, seem to be given technological things that from the perspective of many of us, we really, you know, don't necessarily need. But unfortunately, you know, there does come to a time when if everybody else is using it, you sort of have to get it too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that when, you know, the Internet first came around, I mean, my, you know, strong sense was, well, I can, you know, I have enough communication in my life as it is. I don't need this. But, of course, you know, eventually I had to get it if I were really going to keep up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I agree. Well, I appreciate your comments.
Sure, thanks. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks,
bye.
Tom. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with Tom McBride, he is one of the authors of the Beloit College Mindset List. And they have a Facebook page, and they have a quiz there every day. It sounds like fun. I think I might start doing that, Tom.
Well, thank you. That would be great. We have a lot of fans. We'd love to have more. The more the merrier. I must say, with respect to Tom, your last mm-hmm. caller, that the Cisco Kid was certainly one of my great heroes, and I'm really, really pretty impressed that...
Okay, who's the Cisco Kid? I don't know.
Well, Cisco Kid was played, I believe, by Duncan Rinaldo.
Okay.
And he was a Mexican. He was sort of a Mexican version of the Lone Ranger. He sort of worked both sides of the law.
Okay.
But he was ultimately a good guy, and he was, I think there were movies, and there was an early TV series, and so forth and so on. So, yeah, the Cisco Kid is, that's, I'm really, really very impressed. I hope that Tom got an autograph, and I hope he takes it on Antiques Roadshow.
I, for some reason, am associating the actor Gene Wilder with Cisco Kid. Why am I doing
that? I don't know. Maybe he did a parody of
Maybe he did. Of
the Cisco Kid. That's,
if anybody knows, call me.
Yeah. That's a good one. I don't know. I just remember Cisco and his Tonto companion was, I think, played by the old character actor Leo Carrillo, who played Pancho, I believe. So
okay.
Cisco and Pancho.
Okay. That's kind of ringing a bell now. So,
yeah, there you go.
You know, there's some things that I remember. Now, I remember waking up the morning that the Berlin Wall was
mm-hmm.
being torn down, and they
mm-hmm.
had the video on television
mm-hmm.
showing us, you know, the younger people climbing up the wall and
mm-hmm.
just actually breaking it down. But one of the points in the list is the idea that Russians and Americans always have lived together in space.
Right, exactly. This has been something that we picked up, of course, you know, over maybe the last four or five lists, is that we are now very much in the post-Cold War generation. My daughter, for example, was born, is a terrible Freudian slip, was born in 1988, which was the year, of course, before the Cold War more or less ended. Mm-hmm. She, all of the cliched experiences that many of us had during the Cold War, the fear of a nuclear attack, you know, the bomb shelters, you know, worrying about who the next Russian leader was going to be, that whole thing is simply something that they've had no, you know, real experience of at all.
Right. I mean, the whole idea of Boris and Natasha on the Rocky and Bullwinkle show would have no real resonance with them.
No real relevance at all. I mean, you know, bomb shelters, the Cuban Missile Crisis, mm-hmm. MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction. Those are really sort of references, you know, outside their experience. And but of course, you know, the good news is, of course, that the Cold War is studied in college. So it's not as though they aren't exposed to it in history classes, political theory classes, political science classes, and so forth and so on. And I think it remains, you know, something that you really sort of still have to know about in order to make sense of a lot of our politics today. So it certainly, you know, should not be forgotten and should continue to be studied, but it's outside the sphere of their immediate experience.
Paul, you're on the air. We have just about 10 seconds. What's the connection between Gene Wilder and Cisco Kid? Are you there, Paul?
Yes.
Okay, we just have like 10 seconds.
I think you're talking about, you're referring to a movie called Three Amigos.
Okay.
Wilder was in, and that's what's causing the connection. He has nothing to do with the Cisco Kid.
All right, Paul, thanks.
That's definitely going to be a Facebook question.
All righty, that's all the time we have. Tom McBride, one of the authors of Beloit College Mindset List, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Take care, and thanks for joining us on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.